Welcome to the Beekeeper's Corner Podcast. Hi everyone, I'm Kevin England and this is episode 5 of the BK Corner. People always hope for the best, even in the face of adversity. This saying is from an essay on man by Alexander Pope. I'm not a bookworm or anything, but this saying, well, to me, it may lead to a saying that you're probably more familiar with, which is, hope springs eternal. Hope springs eternal is the pseudo title for this episode. A lot has happened in the last few weeks. Sorry to say that we broke the 2-week barrier for getting an episode out, but work has been a touch insane, and with the end of baseball and soccer seasons, getting into the home office for production has been a touch challenging. If you've been following the last few episodes, then you know that in our local hive reports, we have one hive that is going gangbusters and one that we can't seem to get a queen to rule over. If you hang 10, I'll let you know the latest, but first let's cover what we have in store for this episode. In this edition, we'll bring you the follow-up to the DeMarie dual queen demonstration from the spring NJBA meeting and talk a little bit about some recent things learned concerning installation of a queen. Toward the tail end of the episode, we'll bring you a book review of Richard Bonney's book entitled Hive Management, A Seasonal Guide for Beekeepers. Now let's get to the local hive report. Our last episode tallied off on June 4th. Picking up where we left off, we found that our second hive's installed queen just didn't take. We had just waited a week to see if the queen was in hiding, and on the Saturday, June 5th, one further inspection proved no such luck, so it was off to purchase another queen. I swung back to Stan Wazatowski and SNF Honey Farms for another Carniolian queen. We chatted a bit about the fate of the original queen, and I relayed to Stan that I found some queen cups, but there wasn't any clear answer to the question whether they had been there or not before we got started. Game to give it another try, as the theme for the episode is Hope Springs Eternal. We purchased the other queen, it was installed on the 5th, and following the new method that I learned from Stan on how to affix the queen cage. While I was in his shop, he showed me a way to put it in the hive that I hadn't seen before. A bee's natural tendency is to work upwards. If you can visualize this description, more often than not, a queen cage is hung upside down in a hive. At least that's how I've always seen it done. A queen cage is about the size of 2 packs of Wrigley's gum set on top of each other. It comes with a hole on one or both ends, and often a cork is put in one end and a candy plug is placed in the other. It takes a bit of effort for the bees to eat through the candy plug, and by the time they release the queen, they're acclimated to her and she's ready to go for them. The cage will fit between 2 frames, and the common method of placing it in the hive is to take a nail or two and insert them in one end to serve as a hanger across 2 frames. Often the cage is suspended down between 2 frames, partially spread apart and hanging from the nails. There are occasions where the cage comes with a little round disc that serves the same purpose. Stan suggested that the cage could be posted in a different manner. He pulled out a frame in the shop with some foundation and showed a way to affix the cage with rubber bands. With the frame and just foundation on it, it was an easy prospect and accomplished one key aspect which allowed for the candy to face upwards. The effect of that is the queen could go up. If this technique is to be used with a hive that had built out comb, a hive tool could be used rather quickly to nick out some comb and allow for the queen cage to be placed. Remember that, most cases, bees work their way upwards. I followed Stan's instruction and employed the rubber band method when I installed the queen cage. Incidentally, I took a photo of Stan's explanation while at his shop, and an image of the method he shared is available in the show notes for this episode if you're interested in seeing what I'm talking about. Following the same routine as the last queen we installed, we inspected the hive 2 days later to see if the queen was out, and she was. On her way, or so we thought. Again, following the advice provided last time, we waited a week and then went in the hive to see how our second queen was doing. You know what we found? No queen, no brood, no larvae, no evidence of a queen. It was June 12th, and I'll be honest and say that I was beside myself. I figured once is a fluke, the second time must mean that we're doing something wrong. Again, I turned to our beekeepers forum and searched for some answers. J.D., J-A-Y, his last initial was D, from the forum responded with some comments, one in particular that made me a little nervous. The comment was that sometimes they get into the candy quicker than one thinks, and they don't have time to acclimate. He suggested that he often puts a piece of tape across the entrance for 3 days or so to assure that the acclimation period has time to take place. For us, that advice seemed sage, but the cat was out of the bag, so to speak. The queen was free and somewhere in there. While contemplating the next move, a thought returned. Something Stan shared with me that Saturday that I picked the queen up. He relayed that one of our club members had purchased a queen only to bring it back. They, like us, put a queen in the hive and saw no action. The person stopped by, purchased a queen, and then found the previous queen was going strong when they went back in to do the new install. Keeping the faith, hope springs eternal, I let it ride and thought I would give it a few more days. Now let me ask you to stop for a moment. Are you a novice? Are you a seasoned beekeeper? Ask yourself what you would do facing the same situation. Okay, so here's where fate steps in. In the previous episode, I mentioned that I placed a call to Tim Schuler, the New Jersey State apiarist. That has to be one of the hardest words to pronounce. Yep. And I asked him if he might give us some guidance. Well, it turns out that the call resulted in a visit to our local hives from Bob Hughes, another state inspector that comes out to check beehives in New Jersey. Bob arrived at our property and did an inspection of hive number one. Sharon was out and found a note tucked to the post near our garage. The report, it had glowing review of hive number one, but no answer for hive number two, the queenless hive. Go figure. Bob didn't know the second hive was just up along the edge of the property. If you remember in our previous episode, we decided to move one of the hive boxes about 80 yards away to see if it would have an effect on bee drifting. Dang, so close and yet so far. A state inspector on the scene and a simple miss. I called the phone number on the report the next day and got to speak with Bob directly. I told him of the other hive, and we conversed about the possible problems with the queen taking in the hive, or getting established is probably a better way to say that. He suggested perhaps the fact that there were no nurse bees present and no brood could impact the way the queen was received. What was his recommendation? Well, on the fly, he suggested that we might take a few frames from the working hive that have brood and larvae and make a nuc, put that a few miles away for 4 to 5 days to let it get established, then bring the nuc back, but don't install it outright. Take the existing hive boxes from hive number 2, 25 to 30 feet away, and shake the bees out in the yard. Then return the hive boxes to the hive site and install the nuc in the box at the site location. The takeaway on this is that the bees in the yard would come back, find an established hive, and just join in, everybody be happy. I agreed to employ this method, but asked him if there was anything we should do in the meantime. He shared that he could actually come back on the following Monday and check the hive, and suggested that since there were a lot of bees in there, he thought he'd come and take a look and give us some final recommendations. I hung up the phone, thinking at least we weren't winging it anymore. Hope springs eternal. So there is an end to this. Here it goes. Bob came on Monday, the 21st, as promised. Drum roll, please. He found a laying queen, strong brood patterns, and a box full of bees. I guess there's a lesson in here somewhere. I know hope springs eternal, but perhaps patience is a virtue. Kudos to J.D. from the forum, who shared that perhaps there was a queen in there. His comments now resonate with me in an exchange we had earlier in the week. He said it's not uncommon for a queen to retreat to the bottom of a hive deep when you're in there. They'll often scurry to a dark bottom corner when you open a hive. I know that every time I went in there in the past week or so, I saw bees down on the bottom board. and that might be why she never showed up on the thorough frame inspections. Each experience like this adds to our arsenal of experience, of beekeeping knowledge, and maybe it's painful for some to sit here and listen to this much detail, but for some others, this is a shortcut to an experience that you might face in the future, so we hope you got something out of the recount. I guess I shouldn't forget that there are two hives on the property and some additional activities took place over the last week or so. Bob suggested that we feed our bees sugar water. As noted previously, we did put sugar water honey frames in the hives from last year, but Bob said that we might be better off with sugar water directly, as it would stimulate the bees and get them going on making bees and building out any remaining comb on frames. We know that we have some frames in there that are foundation only. Bees will not draw foundation into comb in the absence of a nectar flow or feeding sugar syrup. Being that we're into June, it's time to give them sugar water to ensure that they will get the bees filling out any remaining comb that is needed so we have ample bees to overwinter, our primary objective starting out two new hives. I went out on Tuesday night and put on our Man Lake feeders on the hives. We use the 4 3/4 inch Man Lake feeders that sit on top of a 10 frame equipment. Sharon made a 5 gallon batch of 1-1 syrup, 1-1 ratio that is, and I poured them on the hives. Figuring the task would be relatively quick, I opened the hives without the aid of a smoker. Funny thing is, when I took the inner cover off hive number one, the top deep was just loaded with bees. It was after work, at dusk, and everybody was home. There had to be dozens of bees present, and stupid me, I peeked down in between the frames and lingered for just a moment too long. One guard bee jumped off the top of the frames, and then I had a full face of bees. You know, I can't recall ever being in that situation, and I have to share that it was scary and exhilarating all at once. Dozens of bees went airborne in a cloud that surrounded me. I didn't flinch as I had my suit on, but I was wearing shorts below my half suit, and I figured it might be in my best interest to get the inner cover back on and retreat a bit until they settled down. I did get stung once in the mix when I put the inner cover on. One bee penetrated my leather gloves that I had on and pricked the outside of my thumb. I've been stung through the glove before, and while it pinches a bit, it seems not to be as detrimental as being stung barehanded. It seems they don't penetrate as deeply. I went back a few minutes later, slipped off the inner cover, and put the feeder on top deep rather expediently. After carefully filling the feeder, I replaced the inner cover and outer cover and left them to desert. I couldn't resist taking a look when I got to hive 2. Like the other box, I pulled off the inner cover and peeked down. Having learned my lesson, I didn't have intentions for digging in. I'd leave that until the anticipated weekend inspection coming up. I did see some of our foundation frames had new comb on them, so feeding them should move us in the right direction. Feeder installed, I called it a night and left our girls and boys to do what they do best. A long hive report, but all's well that ends well. In our next episode, we'll get a gauge about how fast they're progressing. That sure was a lot of information, and I'm ready for a break. When we come back, the DeMarie method and coverage of the dual queen demonstration observed at the New Jersey Beekeepers Spring Meeting.
She was 21, a looking fine. She paddled on into this heart of mine. Told me her name, and I told her mine. She said, what's up? You think it's about time? So we jumped in our boats, paddled the waves. I thought this would be another lazy day. Thought it was time for me to take a dip. So she checked me with her paddle, and I went flip. Paddle hard and paddle fast. Problematic paddler, paddle past. Pardon while she rocks my boat. I'm just trying to stay afloat. Hard to paddle fast, problematic paddle to paddle past. Pardon while she rocks my world. Forever she will be my kayak girl. Goodbye.
In our last episode, I passed along that I'd bring you one more vestige of the New Jersey Beekeepers Spring Meeting, and that's centered on the demonstration of a dual queen hive and a separate but similar setup for hosting a hive using the DeMarie method. I have about a 15-minute audio clip of Michael Long. I believe he's from the South Branch of the New Jersey Beekeepers Association, explaining how it works, and I'd like to set it up for you so that you can understand the basic premise of the demonstration that you're going to hear the audio on. The two-queen method is a process in which to culture a second queen in a single hive box stack. What you'll hear Michael explain is that you put two deep hive boxes on top of each other. In premise, they are separated in the middle with an emery shim, which serves to provide an alternate escape for the bees in the top hive box. The bottom deep hive box sits on a normal bottom board and provides the bees a front entrance. What is an emery shim, pray tell? The shim is attributed to a master beekeeper from the Rockville, Maryland area, who's no longer with us, but pretty smart guy, and when combined with a queen excluder, it allows separation of the two hive boxes. If I have it right, the demonstration utilized the shim to give the top deep box a back entrance. Because of the queen excluder between the boxes, one queen with bees would be operating in the bottom half and using the front entrance. Meanwhile, a second queen would work upstairs of the queen excluder, and those bees would exit out the back of the hive through the emery shim. The interesting part of this is that the colony bees would be shared between the two queens in a stack of a hive because they can traverse up and down in the top and bottom boxes through the queen excluder. Michael also demonstrated the use of a Snellgrove board. Snellgrove is spelled S-N-E-L-G-R-O-V-E, Snellgrove with one L for those who want to do some research. The Snellgrove board's purpose is to control swarming. It works to separate two hives much in the same way, but unlike the queen excluder, it won't allow bees to pass back and forth between the boxes. I won't go much further into it. Let's get to the audio so you can hear what's going on. Here's Michael Long with the two-queen method.
Which would be fine. In that case, if you decided to make your own queen, you've got to give an entrance of some type. Okay? And when you do that, you're going to put the entrance to the rear. So you can either drill a little hole in your box. Okay, you can get yourself an emery shim or army shim. This one's a little bit bigger. I use these. It's just a tiny little hole. Put it through the back. Put my top on. Essentially what I've got is two hives now going. They got one here on the bottom. They've got a super. They can deal with the super. They got plenty of places to put their honey. And I've got another potential hive up here. But basically what I've done is I've created a swarm. I've got the queen down here. So all the incoming, all the foragers are coming here. Guess what? There's a lot of empty space because we gave them all kinds of empty comb. No problem feeling crowded. Now up here we've got our potential new queen or a potential second hive. At this point what we do, if you're going to raise your own queen and you're going to go through that process in the next few weeks, you're going to make sure that there's a queen cell in there and then you're going to check to see if she's made it and so on and so forth. If you don't want a queen, you just want to help prevent your bees from swarming, what you're going to do is as you put this together, you're going to go through every comb and you're going to shake off the bees and you're going to inspect and you must find all your queen cells. Okay? Scratch them off. You still got all this brood up here getting ready to be born. What you're trying to do is keep your bees. You try to keep them from swarming. Close them back up. 9 days later, come back. Make sure there's still none of those eggs got converted into a queen cell. And they're fine. After a few weeks, what will happen is that you can combine this whole box back again together because they're all together. And that's your queen there. I've done this many times where I've raised queens, two queens in here. Bees coming and going out the back hive, coming and going out the front. I've re-supered in the middle. Most times the queen does not go downwards. She'll want to go up. Stay, she'll spread out here. This way now you've just saved yourself $20. You've raised your own queen, maybe you've raised more than one queen. right? But you still have all your bees, and they're still all working. There's the bees flying here. Some of them want to come and go out this way. Some of them want to come out and go this way. So now you still have your bees that can make honey. Now you can still re-super this. You can add a super in between here, or you can add another queen excluder if you have the equipment and put another box on here.
So when that queen emerges, do you pull that off, or you'll run a two-queen hive?
You run two queens. Two queens. If you can get it early enough in the season, it's kind of, it's not too late now, but early enough in the season, if you can do it in April and get a second queen going, or early May, you end up with a lot more bees that collect honey for you in the same. So now you've got two queens producing bees collecting honey. And this way you get to keep your bees. You haven't lost them to a swarm. You've raised a new queen. You've got a fresh queen for the coming year. You can take this queen down here if you don't want to pinch her off, and you can put her in a small box and start, you know, help her start another hive and try and keep her going for the years. But
so the fact that the workers can travel up and down the whole hive,
right,
the fact that there are two queens and two queen scents and everything, doesn't pose a problem?
Doesn't bother them, no. I've personally done this, and it does not bother them. They come and go. The two queens can't reach each other. Once this starts to get full of honey, the other queen is very rarely will she go below their dome. It's basically, you've created another dome here. When she starts hitting that honey, she doesn't want to go that far. And that's basically it. This is called the demare method. There's also another method I use.
Going into the winter.
Into the winter. This is just temporary. You know, at some point, you're going to collect your honey, and you have to decide. You can't run two queens in the wintertime.
Okay.
You can store these in the wintertime at some point, I guess, if you wanted. You still got to have a rear entrance, but the idea is that you want a fresh queen, so you've raised a new queen here. You didn't have to go down to Georgia and buy one. Okay, you've got a Jersey-bred queen here. You've got an old, tired queen here. You either want to keep her in a small box, maybe, or just kill her.
So when would you... So after you've taken your honey off, that's when you decide what...
In July, yeah.
So then
you start evening everything out.
Queens.
Yeah. Good luck. So that's any other questions?
Oh, the other board you're going to talk about?
This board here. Okay, this is called, anybody know who Snell Grove was? Anybody hear Snell Grove? He was another beekeeper. He invented this type of system here to basically almost do the same thing. Double screen, separated. The bees cannot touch each other. They can smell each other. They can't touch each other. You can benefit from the warmth. This particular one only has gates on three sides. There's a lot that you can do with this board. I won't get into all of it, but the basics of it is you can do somewhat the similar thing here without having to use queen excluder. You do the same thing. You split your brood. This is when you intentionally want to raise queens using this board. It's a two-queen system, but what you're doing is you're using the heat from this one to be able to raise bees. Usually I use it early in the season. Still have it this way. It gives you the option to have many different entrances. Okay. Now I have no entrance in the front. Okay. We have our main entrance here. Coming and going. Queen excluder. Honey super. Okay, you can run a single deep and force them to build out some honey for you. It's a secret. A lot of folks don't tell you. You don't have to have a double deep to make honey. Okay, it really helps. Now I've split this hive. Remember, all the brood, eggs are up here. Now what I do is I've got a gate in the back here. Dennis is still on top. I've now opened this gate, the top gate. I can come and go as they please. The only thing is with this is you do need to get some kind of a feeder, get a frame feeder or something in here. Now what you've done is all you've got really basically in here is nurse bees. There's not going to be too many flyers right away. They'll convert some nurse bees into flyers once they realize there's not enough in here. So you do need to feed these. You'll have the warmth. Again, you'll be able to raise a second queen or more in here. You'll still be able to smell each other, and you'll be able to use the warmth from here. When it comes time, you've collected your honey. You can still keep supering underneath of this. Now, essentially, what you've raised, you don't have to invest in all kinds of more equipment. You've got your second queen, third queen up in here. Right. Beautiful. Summer's done. I'm taking this off. Get rid of this queen. There's no problems combining these because they all have the same smell. You just take this off, take your super off, put them together, choose to get rid of the queen or not, take her to another box. Now you've got a fresh young queen in here. Hopefully you've evaluated her. She's laying real well, doing good stuff. All right?
So what do you want no eggs down below?
Why?
Yeah.
Because I want to attract all the nurses upstairs, and I want the queen to concentrate on laying more stuff, and I want a lot more open space down below. You're basically separating, you're creating a swarm. The queen leaves with no eggs. You got cat brood in here, but you know, if you've got no space up here for all your cat brood, it is okay to put some cat brood down here.
You're trying to make them think they swarmed, in essence?
Yeah. I mean,
you're
in
trying to
sense,
create the
yeah.
environment of what they would find with a swarm. There would be no eggs.
Basically, yeah. It's, you know, the science of it is not, you know, too tricky. Just you want to keep the babies, all the babies. You want to give her just space down here for all the foragers to come in. And so bringing in nectar like crazy. And one of the reasons, a lot of times, new beekeepers will do, they'll look and they'll go, ah, I got plenty of space. Look at all the space I got. Empty foundation. Well, there's really not a lot of space. There's nothing. It's like there's no furniture in here. There's no drawn comb. Now, even if you do have drawn comb, you go, oh, look at that. There's all this uncapped comb. Well, right. There's no larva and there's no capped honey. But if you look at it like this, you go, oh, my. Every single hole is glistening. What does that tell you? Well, it's nectar. It's packed with nectar at this point. They've got no place to put anything. They're locked out. They need space. So the idea is what you're going to do is I've taken, you know, now in my spare box, I remember I brought over lots of drawn comb. Hopefully I've got extra drawn comb. Not foundation, but drawn comb. So now I've got extra frames of honey here in different stages of filling or not. And I can add them to another hive that doesn't have as much and carry on. You end up manipulating what you've got. A lot of
what's the most number of queens you've ever run in one hive?
Okay, that's a good question. That's a real good question, smart fellow. I've taken this particular board. I came across a box one time. Matter of fact, it was this time last year. Year before. It was Memorial Day weekend, basically. I got a call from one of my farms. Mike, there's bees all over the place. Well, that particular hive had a queen in it. She couldn't go anywhere. So they tried to go someplace, and I couldn't get there. I had a prior engagement. I got there the next day. I'm opening the box. I'm going through the box. And as you go through time, you'll find that if you're lucky and you go through a bee box and you find all these queen cells, the queen cells will actually be ripe enough that they're all starting to hatch at the same time. But then you just pop them. They get a little brown ring on the bottom that just where they've already been chewing through before they pop open. So you can just pop that open a little bit, and you got a lot of live queens. So what I did is I took frames. Oh, great. I had made sure in my bottom box. At this point, they had swarmed. There's no queen. She left. And whatever, rodents or whatever got her, birds, she's gone. So now I have a basically queenless hive. This is a double. What I did at the time was I had a box like this. I made sure the bottom had some queen cells and a queen, a live queen coming out. I put one of these on. I opened up the side gate. Put a box on, queen cells. I had another one of these snow growth boards, put it on top of this one. Put another box on top, make sure it had queen cells, and put an entrance to the back. And I actually had three hives going at once, with the front, a side, and a back entrance. Every single one of them made it. Every single one of them survived the winter. You just split. It's not that hard. You just have to know the biology a little bit. It's really easy to make your own queens and manipulate. The worst thing you can do is just stand back and go, what might happen? Just do something. You know, they're bees. They'll work around you, and they really will. Now, so that basically concludes that little part. I'll give it again in a few minutes. Any questions? Any more questions? I do, actually.
I'm missing something. Like, why wouldn't you just split them?
Lack of equipment.
But if you have your equipment,
if you have the equipment,
would that be a better?
Right. Well, the idea here is that you've got queens. Especially with this other method, with the you're splitting them, and you've got just your queen excluder here. You're trying to retain as many bees as possible, many field forces as possible. So that's what you're trying to do. Instead of splitting them, you know, the object here on this particular method is not to make more bees, make egg another queen, but the idea is to retain as many bees in one hive as possible. Splitting is the different objective. Splitting means you want more hives. Here, all you want to do is re-clean what you have and try and get some honey.
But, I mean, even if you make more hives, somebody's going to want them, even if you as a beekeeper
well,
don't
true,
want
to absolutely
keep
true.
Them.
But a lot of backyard folks, they want some honey. They want some honey, they don't want to keep buying queens all the time. And sorry about the queen breeders in the crowd, but,
well,
you know, it doesn't hurt. It's a nice skill to have to be able
yeah,
to...
But, I mean, you don't have to buy a new queen when you split, necessarily.
No, when you split, no, you don't have to either. You can use a queen cell. You could take the same method here and go, oh, look, I'm just going to take this, and now I've got a frame here with eggs, larvae, and brood. I know that if eggs, for the next 24 hours, the larvae is going to be aged old enough that they're going to figure out there's no queen in here.
Right.
And I could certainly, it's called a walk away, take this away and put this somewhere else,
right.
And now I have the beginnings of another hive. They're going to raise a queen, certainly. But now I've got this hive here. I just took 14,000 bees away. Here, I'm keeping 14,000 bees on here, and I'm trying to make honey. That's why I've got the super on here. It's just a different objective. You know, some of us want 100 hives, some of us just want 100 pounds of honey. You know.
What's the advantage to keeping all the bees in one, is it split the same amount of bees?
No, it's not the same amount of bees, because once you've got all these bees in here, they've got to take care of the brood. There's only so many nurses and so many bees that are going to be born at one time. If you have all these full, there's not as many as there's going to
they
be here.
And,
right.
Take care
it's different. Yeah, there's been many studies where you can take, you know, you can have three hives at 30,000 or 20,000 or one hive at 60,000. The one with the 60,000 is going to outproduce the three hives of 20 any day, as far as honey goes. You know, and a lot of us, you know, the amount of money we spent, we could have a lifetime of honey in our pantries right now instead of spending money on equipment and bees. So this is a way to be able to do that. I do have some handouts. I only have a few, so take them. And if you're from the same club, share them a little bit.
It's okay.
The top one.
As you could tell, it was an interesting demonstration. And I have to say, it was the first time I was ever exposed to it. Truth be told, I'm not 100% sure that I completely understand the concepts, but I'm sure that if I ever got myself into the position where I wanted to try and raise two queens in one box, or prevent some sort of swarm, I could go back and reference this and or do a little more research on an emery shim and or a Snellgrove board. You know, sorry for the side note here, but let me go down a different path for a second. George Emery's legacy can be found in what are deemed the Pink Pages. George provided what was referred to as George's Pink Pages newsletter. They're notes, advice, and instructions provided by George when he was alive, and one in particular explains the use of an emery shim. Emery indicated that the sole purpose of the shim was to relieve brood chamber congestion by providing ingress and egress to the super area and should only be used when supers are in place. It specifically should not be used as an upper entrance in the fall or winter, and it should not be used between supers of foundation-only frames, which is different from drawn combs. The notes that George provided... it's a gold mine of information, and you can be sure that I'll provide a link on where you can find them posted in our show notes. Incidentally, a special thanks is due to Peter Kersbacher. I'm not sure if I'm saying that name properly, as he's taken the time to collect all of George's notes through the year and assemble them for consumption on the web. He's done a fantastic job at indexing the newsletter, and you owe it to yourself to check these out. Again, we'll provide links to these because the links are rather long on our show notes. As often is the case, I have a photo of the emery shim that was shown at the demonstration. And I also have one of a Snellgrove board, and that too will be posted in the show notes. Let's give some fair coverage to the Snellgrove board. It's an interesting contraption, and it provides hinged joints on one or all sides that could be used for various methods. It's kind of like a piece of plywood with a frame around it that has hinged joints, a screw through a piece of wood that you can turn out and turn back in. You could use them for entrances on all sides of your hive. I would suspect that you might be able to even slide some pollen patties in there if that's your thing. I know I'm not giving it justice. Perhaps it's just best to send you to the show notes for episode 5 at our website. And for those who didn't catch the address, it's www.bkcorner.org. Time for a BK Corner book review, Hive Management, a Seasonal Guide for Beekeepers. The publisher is Story Publishing, the author Richard Bonney. It was published in 1990. The book type is paperback. I'm going to bring you a bunch of different facets about this. The readability scale, easy to read. The targeted reader level, in my estimation, while it's not out of reach of the beginner, it's probably geared more towards a beekeeper that has at least one season of beekeeping under their belt. That being said, a beginning beekeeper certainly shouldn't be dissuaded from picking this one up. Quick synopsis. In a nutshell, it's like having access to a seasoned beekeeper and educator who took the time to lay out each topic and provide that background insight that's often missing when you're talking to a veteran beekeeper who knows what's right but may not be able to back up the details behind what's being expressed. The book approach? The author imparts that beekeepers often think of things from a seasonal approach, but expresses an opinion that the integrated approach that interconnects the different facets is really what's being practiced. Format of the book is mostly text with an occasional black and white photo. There's a handful of graphs also included to illustrate some of the points in the book. The text is large and legible. The topics are covered in a reasonable amount of detail and provide a good and seemingly experienced explanation of the topics covered. The major topics cover bee behaviors, seasonal activity, and a wealth of beekeeper activities that take place across a season of keeping bees. The pictures are appropriate in size and the content to support the text that refers to them. As a book review goes, the book gives you a sense that you have someone who is well-versed in the ways of beekeeping and is imparting information to the reader. It seems to assume that you have some knowledge, and to that point, it's not something where a brand new beekeeper would get all that's going on. That being said, however, a new beekeeper would very much get a sense of all that is involved. True to the approach Bonney set out to do, there were several explanations in the book that expanded on common and not so uncommon knowledge about keeping bees. For example, in the topic of robbing, he shared thoughts about foreign bees coming to a hive. He lets you know how they get in sometimes, why they're not checked on entry, and that in fact sometimes bees switch hives, something that many beekeepers wouldn't know takes place. The book is more than just the basic inspection, honey extraction, and setting up a hive coverage that many books will stay within. It expands into detail on such topics such as requeening, the mechanics of foraging for bees, the intricacies of swarming, and other items that you might not find in a typical book on beekeeping. Overall, the book is thorough, insightful, and will instill confidence that you're getting your information from someone who knows the craft. The takeaway? I found the book to be an easy read and a sound book in total. I also found it to be a book I will consider when I'm engaged in certain activity and may want to read up on it. So what's the recommendation? When making recommendations on this podcast, I'll recommend books with one of these four terms. Others are better, worth a look at the library, consider a purchase, and the last is, it should be on your bookshelf. As a rule, I'll be conservative on the ratings, as I don't want to tell you to buy every book that has a reasonable approach. I'll also let you know what the review rating is on Amazon.com, if there is one. For this book, let's give it a ranking of consider a purchase. There are 9 customer reviews on Amazon.com, and this book is rated a 5 out of 5. This has been a book review of Hive Management, a seasonal guide for beekeepers by Richard Bonney. The ISBN number for the book is 978-0-88266-637-2. ISBN number is like a serial number for a book. Type that into any website and you should be able to come up with the exact book that's being reviewed. There are a couple odds and ends that I want to do before we close out this episode. One of them is talk about our Man Lake feeders. I mentioned them earlier. Our feeders are really great to work with. You can fill the feeder without opening the hive. The feeders hold up to 4 gallon apiece, so it's unlike the jar feeders placed at the entrance. You don't have to keep reloading them, and they don't require you to go inside the hive to fill and spill sugar syrup all over the place. Incidentally, we do have the internal frame feeders, or division board feeders as they're referred to, but for now we've gotten away from using it. During the winter months, or when it gets colder, a lot of beekeepers will tell you that the bees will not come up to a top of the hive feeder, and they do get to the division board feeders when it gets a little bit cooler. My one gripe about the Man Lake feeder is I don't understand why they didn't close off the space under the pans. If you turn the feeder upside down, you'll see that they have big hollow openings where the bees get up in. Sometimes they build burr comb and other things in there. There's probably a design or cost implication that drove them to the solution of leaving those spaces open, but it seems to me that they could have done it differently. Speaking of feeding, we make our syrup by heating water in a large restaurant pot and then pouring sugar in and stirring it until the sugar is resolved. A lot of people ask about sugar syrup. I think I even covered it in an episode earlier. We like to mix it in a 1-to-1 ratio. We've heard others do it in a 2-to-1 ratio. I guess to each his own. This may seem like a common sense, but the one question I hear over and over again when the meetings take place with beekeepers is how do you prepare your solution? So there you have it. I'm sure in upcoming episodes we'll probably talk about how others prepare their sugar solutions, as everybody seems to have their own way to do it. The last of the odds and ends concerns management of photos, videos, and links. As you've heard through this episode and others, I'll do my best to post different forms of media in support of the podcast. To that end, I've added a new video section and sound recording section to share things that were extras or put them in a central place so you, the listener, doesn't have to go digging through show notes to find pictures and media. I'm struggling some with management of photos, as I don't want to get into too much of photo management on the website. Sometime after this episode, I plan to provide a link to a photo collection website where I can outsource the photos referenced in the podcast. For now, images will be posted as part of the show notes, as they have been expressed throughout these episodes. By now, you probably know where to find things. Go and get it at our website at www.bkcorner.org. It's time to bring this episode to a close, but before we go, let's give credit where credit is due. The show's theme song is from the band that could still get the job done, Huey Lewis and the News. The tune is an unreleased, but shared with the fans, demo of a song entitled Your Love is Killing Me. Songs in this episode include a really catchy tune by Small Fish entitled Kayak Girl off the album Catch This. Michael Martin brought us Blood Red Roses off the album Fatal Flower Garden. It's going to be Tanya Witt taking us out with this song, which is titled Stormy Monday. Well, maybe with this episode we've proved that hope does spring eternal, and we hope that we'll see you back here again at the Beekeeper's Corner. Thanks, everyone, for coming out to listen, and we'll catch you next time.
Thank you.